Tribu, estamos tratando de solucionar el problema incorrecto y la respuesta está en el músculo. Estás a punto de escuchar el episodio de Mis Sueños. En casi todos los episodios de Filosofía se menciona la importancia del ejercicio y la súper importancia del músculo para una vida más sana y más larga. Y la persona que más ha popularizado el concepto de medicina centrada en el músculo es una doctora a quien yo conocí escuchando una entrevista que el gran doctor Huberman le hizo, y de ahí la entrevistó Mel Robbins, y ahora, ¿quién creen? Así es, querida tribu, el día de hoy vamos a entrevistar a la doctora Gabrielle Lyon, la especialista mundial en el tema de músculo. Está aquí hoy compartiéndote ciencia, conocimiento y hacks que vas a poder poner en práctica el día de hoy. Este tema es el que personalmente le he dedicado más investigación, en el que se basa mi TEDx y otras conferencias y la mayor parte del contenido en redes que hago. Es que el músculo esquelético es nuestra armadura, nos hace más fuertes, pero sobre todo nos hace más independientes, desde poder abrir una lata para comer cuando somos adultos mayores o ir al baño solos, hasta poder tener más posibilidades de sobrevivir un cáncer, una terapia intensiva. El músculo es la verdadera solución para una composición corporal sana e incluso, como lo dice la doctora, para revertir la obesidad. Porque seamos honestos, estamos haciendo algo que no funciona. Si, según la OMS, la prevalencia mundial de la obesidad se ha triplicado desde 1975, tenemos que tomar otro enfoque y este es uno muy, muy lógico. Y bueno, una sana y suficiente masa muscular, ya sabemos que acelera nuestro metabolismo, nos ayuda a oxidar más grasa, evita fracturas y nos permite básicamente hacer eso que disfrutamos con aquellos que amamos por más tiempo. ¿Cómo lo hacemos? ¿Qué es lo que tengo que tomar en cuenta? Bueno, pues la doctora Gabrielle Lyon, especialista máxima en el tema, el día de hoy explicándotelo en Filosofía. Una cosa más, querida tribu, este episodio será en inglés y en mi caso probablemente en Spanglish y pondremos subtítulos para que tú puedas leerlo y quedarte con toda la información completa. Recuerda que esta no es una consulta médica, no son recomendaciones directas, simplemente es información de cosas que a mí me apasionan, que quiero que tú puedas conocer y probar, y espero que te sirva para mejorar tu vida y poder resumir eso que tienes ganas de saber, pero no tienes tiempo de leer. ¡Vámonos! Filosofía.
Filosofía.
Eso que quieres saber,
pero no tienes tiempo de leer.
Aquí vas a encontrar herramientas prácticas basadas en ciencia para sacarle más provecho a tu cuerpo y a tu vida. La doctora Gabrielle Lyon es médica y autora bestseller del New York Times por su libro Forever Strong, A New Science-Based Strategy for Aging Well. También destacada por The Wall Street Journal y muchos otros medios de todo el mundo. Este libro, disponible en español y una docena más de idiomas, motiva a lectores de todo el mundo a cultivar salud y fuerza para una vida más plena. Su formación académica incluye 2 especialidades clínicas en geriatría y ciencias de la nutrición en la Universidad de Washington y una licenciatura en Ciencias de la Nutrición por la Universidad de Illinois. Es reconocida por su conocimiento sobre proteínas y salud muscular. Colabora con diversas instituciones, incluyendo las Fuerzas de Operaciones Especiales de los Estados Unidos, a través de su práctica privada, charla TEDx, podcast, canal de YouTube y comunidad en línea. La doctora Lyon inspira a las personas a desarrollar fuerza física y mental, promoviendo el bienestar no solo en el gimnasio, sino también en la vida. Querida tribu, vamos con todo y aquí está, bienvenida, doctor. You started a revolution based on science and research. You changed the way we had been approaching weight loss and even obesity. You focus on more, not less, more muscle, more health. And you shifted the narrative away from the war on fat. And with that, the revolution of becoming stronger, forever strong, as your book says, is transforming bodies, mind, and lives. And in your own words, obesity is not the problem, right? We are trying, or we're trying, to fix the wrong problem. So saying I'm excited to have you here, it's a major understatement, because you really are the boss in this subject. And I mentioned you in this podcast more times than I can count, promise. I read your book twice and I listened to your talk, and I was at Eudaimonia Summit recently. I took your class. That's because so you, doctor.
This is so great. I love it. Oh my gosh. I gotta take a picture. This is so great.
So yeah, we already big together. You walk the talk, doctor. I saw you training. I mean, because I know you're great speaking and I love your conference and everything, but this was so great to see you and I enjoy it so much. So here we are.
This is so great. Oh my gosh, making my day. This is so great. Amazing. So,
here's the proof. So thank you very much. I've been following you for years. I really love, and I really love that now the people from Mexico and Latin America is going to be able to know more about what you're saying. So thank you. Thanks for being here at Philosophia.
Oh, I have to say, this is probably the best intro and unexpected surprise that I've ever had in all of my years of podcasting. So thank you so much. And I remember you. That was great and really, really wonderful.
That means a lot, really. So I want to begin this podcast by talking about Betty, the character you mentioned in your book. And I want to talk about that because I'm sure many women around the world, regardless of where they live, can deeply relate to her. So, yeah.
Yeah. Really, when I founded Muscle-Centric Medicine, which is really changing the way that we think about medicine and focusing on skeletal muscle, I wish that I found it because there was some happy story, that I'd gone through some transformation, and now this is why we have muscle-centric medicine. But in fact, that actually wasn't what happened. I created muscle-centric medicine because of deep failures in the system of healthcare. I was doing my fellowship in nutritional sciences and geriatrics at WashU in St. Louis. And part of, so you go through residency, and then some physicians can choose to then continue on to specialize further. And I had already had done 4 years of nutritional sciences in my undergraduate. But I knew that I had to learn more. If I really wanted to make a change in the world, then I had to get those credentials. Begrudgingly, I just wanted to do nutrition. And I said, all right, well, I really just want to study nutrition. And they said, no. They said, the deal is, if you want to study nutrition, you also have to become a geriatric fellow, which is taking care of individuals over the age of 65. Was not interested. But I will tell you what, it changed everything for me. I was working on a study that was looking at brain function and body composition. And it was basically how overweight an individual was, what did it do to the brain? I didn't know what we would find. And I imaged this woman's brain. And I, you know, in studies, you spend a lot of time with people. I was there when she was working out, when she was getting nutritional training or nutritional coaching, and then doing brain imaging. And I imaged her brain. This is a woman in her mid-50s with 3 kids who had always struggled with weight, yo-yo dieting. It's probably like a lot of your listeners who have been struggling with body composition, losing fat, building muscle, then just this whole cycle. This fad diet came out, this new nutritional strategy. I imaged her brain and her brain looked like the beginning of an Alzheimer's brain. And I was like, we really screwed this up. She was doing everything that we as a medical society was telling her. Eat less, move more. And she spent the last 30 years trying to lose the same 30 pounds. And I had this aha moment. And I think we all have very discrete moments in life that change the trajectory for us. And I felt so responsible. And even if I wasn't the one telling her to do these things, I was contributing by not telling her to do something else. And I realized at that moment, this focus on obesity is a sidebar when the real issue is skeletal muscle. And had we focused on skeletal muscle for the last 30 years for her, she would have been able to be strong. Her body composition would have been maintained and her brain wouldn't look the way that it did. And in that instant, that's when muscle-centric medicine was born.
I thank for that aha moment that you had, because that changed a lot of things for a lot of people, including myself and all the people who's listening today. And that brings me to today's topic. I just want you to tell us, I know you said a little bit of that, but in simple words for the audience, what is the muscle-centric medical approach?
Yeah. Well, it's the most important one. It is the concept that skeletal muscle is the organ of longevity. If we spend our time and our attention dedicated to the health of our muscle, not only will we be physically stronger, we'll be mentally stronger, the quality of our life is going to be better, and our ability to manage and weather the storms of our life will be completely different. In fact, I would argue, quite simply, we go from weathering the storm to becoming the storm. And that is what muscle-centric medicine is.
It's power. Every time I listen to you and I read you, I can feel power. And I think that it's so important. And as I said at the beginning, you talk about more, not less, more power, more muscle, more health. And I know your journey, and you just told us about it, was long to get here, because
17 years long, girlfriend. I don't recommend that for anybody. What a terrible idea. 17 years of education.
I was going to say that 20 years ago, when I started to get certified as a fitness and nutrition coach, this wasn't here, you know? And now, because of your 17 years of journey, we have the privilege of listening to this. So please, guys, pay attention to this, because this is really a privilege. You, doctor, call skeletal muscle the organ of longevity. Can you give us some powerful statistics, the ones that you share in your book, about how having healthy muscle make us more resilient, make us more like powerful, and how muscle is a form of medicine?
Well, first of all, when this podcast is done, if you guys are not out there doing push-ups, then we have not done our job, because skeletal muscle, we think about skeletal muscle as this jacked and tan, looking good at the beach. All of this is important. We think about strength and functional mobility. These are the obvious things. But skeletal muscle is so much more than that. It is really our center for our metabolism. And when I say center for our metabolism, number one, I will say we've been trying to fix, quote, obesity for the last 50 years or so, and we've done a terrible job. It's not getting any better. And it's always focused on, we have something to lose. It is fat focused. It is focused on cardiovascular activity. It's focused on eating less, eating low fat, all of these other objectives that many people have implemented, and it's left a world of obesity. Conversely, skeletal muscle is the only organ system. By the way, it's an organ system. Just like the heart is an organ system and you have cardiologists, muscle is the largest endocrine organ in the body. And when I say endocrine organ, what does that mean? That's what's so fascinating about skeletal muscle, is when you contract this tissue, it secretes myokines just based on the way in which and the time in which you exercise. You have an ability to affect brain function. You have an ability to affect your liver. Every inter-organ crosstalk you could imagine, skeletal muscle is the key in communication. And it's not that it's just the key, it's the key in making things better. For example, when you exercise, when you do resistance training and or cardiovascular activity, you release these peptide hormones called myokines. They travel through the brain. They travel to the brain. They create and improve brain function through something called neurogenesis. The liver becomes more effective at using fuel. We've all heard of fatty liver. So skeletal muscle is so unique in that it creates this cascade of anti-inflammatory effects that will change the way that we age. And quite frankly, when you think about how much to eat and your nutrition, it's the focal point is all about skeletal muscle. And if you can create a diet that tracks along with skeletal muscle, balancing your skeletal muscle health, then you will be able to avoid cardiovascular disease, to be able to avoid dementia, which is type 3 diabetes of the brain. You name it, chances are the healthier skeletal muscle mass you have, the greater your survivability against nearly all kinds of diseases. You cannot say that for any other organ system. And it's also the only organ system that you have voluntary control over. I checked, my friend, you couldn't tell your thyroid to produce thyroid hormone. But girl, you and I, we did push-ups together. You told yourself we're going to do this.
Yeah. Esta es una de esas opiniones valientes que tengo que aceptar que me equivoqué. Durante algunos años no creía realmente en el colágeno hidrolizado, pero ahora varios estudios han demostrado a nivel mundial que el colágeno no nada más sí sirve, sino que es maravilloso para mejorar la firmeza e hidratación de la piel, mejorar la calidad del pelo, de las uñas, para tener un sistema digestivo más sano y para contrarrestar algunos de los efectos que se viven en la peri y menopausia, por mencionar solo algunos. Así que para mí es un gusto que el día de hoy, y después de haberlos buscado durante mucho tiempo, Ella Nutrition sea patrocinador de Fitlosofía, el podcast. No tiene azúcar, no tiene maltodextrina, no tiene lácteos, no tiene endulzantes artificiales, es keto friendly para todos aquellos que están haciendo una dieta baja en carbohidratos y básicamente es el colágeno que yo tomo.
We have the power, we really do. These myokines that you talk about, they're so powerful and it's in our control, which is the great revolution that you talk about in your book. Everything that can go better if we actually do push-ups. But if we don't, how much muscle can we lose per year if we do nothing about it? Like, we ignore this podcast.
First of all, I'm going to blow your mind. I will tell you that if you are older, that you will lose 3 times more muscle mass than someone who is younger, depending on the time. So it would take an older person will lose in a week to 2 weeks what it would take a younger person to lose in a month. So for example, if someone goes on bed rest, you might lose 2 to 5 pounds of muscle mass in 10 days. That is tremendous. And a younger person will be able to recover. The way in which aging happens is there are discrete periods of time where we have accelerated muscle loss. And the more muscle mass you have going into aging, the greater your survivability. So the thing is that people think that aging is this linear trajectory. It's just this downhill, inevitable slope. That's not what happens at all. It is really about protecting and building as soon as you can, as early as you can.
Exactly. If you didn't do it before, now it's the time. I mean, yesterday was the best day, but today it's enough. I mean, talking about skeletal muscle sometimes doesn't sound very sexy, but yo-yo diets, what you say at the beginning, does. Because the majority of people, in Spanish we call it rebote, have been through this. Like, you go on a diet, stop eating, lose weight, then you start eating again, gain that weight or more. And that is so frustrating. But how is that related to muscle?
Yeah. You know, muscle, it's interesting. Muscle loss, it's easy. Listen, I wish it was as easy to lose fat as it is to lose muscle. And the reason that it's so easy to lose muscle is because it's so necessary. It's so needed. It is your reservoir of these amino acids. So when you are sleeping overnight, your body pulls from these amino acid stores. Your body is going through repair and replacement. I mean, your body will turn over 4 times a year. You'll have an entirely new body 4 times a year. And
crazy.
Isn't that crazy? And skeletal muscle is where, you know, this is our quote storage form of protein. And so we require it to be able to aid in periods when we're not eating. And really, it is the quality of our tissue. And I will tell you something that I've never said before. Can I share?
Please share it to the Mexican and Latin American community.
So I believe that there's this idea of body fat, and we all know about body fat. But I think what we're going to find that's even more impactful, that we're going to be able to begin to see in the literature is actually the percentage of fat in the muscle. And the percentage of fat in the muscle, that's going to be the major determinant of our metabolic health and aging. And we don't have the tools to look at it routinely and on a global scale yet, but this is where I think the future is going.
That is amazing. I think you said something about it at the Eudaimonia talk, so I love to hear
not
it.
Not indeed. No, not. I've never shared that. So I think, you want to know what I really think? I think that body fat is passe. I think there's going to come a point where it doesn't matter what the body fat percentage is. I think it's really? Gonna. I think what is actually going to matter is the percentage of fat within the muscle. I don't even think a body fat's going to be an issue. I think that you could be 30% body fat, you could be 20% body fat. I think we're looking at the wrong place of body fat. I think that it's all about how much fat is in that tissue.
That is so amazing. And I believe you because everything you have said, now it's becoming the trend. So it's crazy how something that was like the common enemy now probably won't even exist, you know? So
we'll see. I'm going to work on it. I'm very excited about this. I think that, again, you know, humans are really interesting creatures is that we get a pattern of thinking, you know, where we create this pattern and this paradigm in our mind, and it's not always right, but it makes sense to us over periods of time. And it doesn't mean it's the most effective or efficient way of moving the needle forward. And it really takes stretching ourselves to be able to answer the call of a problem. And I think that part of me really thinks that it is about being able to not just think about the quality of the skeletal muscle, but also what else is riding along with it.
So. Wow. That's gonna be the next years, doctor.
And I'll keep you posted.
And you're going to be there, please. Well, in your talk at the Eudaimonia Summit, you said something that stuck with me. You said sarcopenia doesn't start when we are old necessarily. It can begin in childhood. And well, first I want you please to explain us what is sarcopenia and what do you mean by that? How can it start so early?
Yeah, this is another really new concept. And I think it's really important for your viewers and listeners.
Yes.
We think about sarcopenia, as you know, as a decrease in muscle mass and function. What sarcopenia looks like visually is our parents and our grandparents getting skinny and frail. And we've seen it and it's devastating and we don't want anyone to go through that. People believe that that's a disease of aging. It's a disease that happens to people because they've gotten old. And I would argue that there are sarcopenic phenotypes, meaning there's sarcopenic processes that exist in youth and that it actually begins in youth and it's not dependent on age. It is accelerated with age, but you could be sarcopenic and be 18 years old. And it is the loss of skeletal muscle mass and function, especially if we are sedentary. This fat will infiltrate into tissue and the longer it's there, the more deadly it becomes.
And that is because we don't move. A lot of people really, it's super sedentary, even though they really young, no?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. Number one, we're totally sedentary, right? I mean, I can give you the numbers for Americans that 50% of us are not even exercising. 74% are not meeting the basic recommendations. And then the question is, what about our youth? Are we setting our youth up for success? And I would say that we are not. And what is even more concerning is that if we are setting ourselves up for failure, number one, because we're not moving, and we should talk, I should mention that why does skeletal muscle mass become unhealthy? I think there are two primary things that happen when we're inactive. Number one, it increases insulin resistance. So the insulin is less effective. You will ultimately see higher levels of blood glucose. So insulin resistance, insulin is a peptide hormone that is released from the pancreas. And you don't want to depend on it. You don't want a ton of it. I think that it is a fail-safe mechanism and should only be used when needed, for example. We should not be dependent on you know, driving our insulin up all the time by eating a bunch of carbohydrates. So number one, skeletal muscle becomes insulin resistant, which is really, really bad and creates an inflammatory state. And then second is when we are sedentary, it's kind of like a swamp. You've seen a swamp, you know what a swamp is, and it's gross and the water is stagnant and it smells and it's just a mess. There's bugs. Well, if you think about your muscle like a lake or a stream, it has to have movement. And when you don't exercise your muscle, it becomes very stagnant. And this, I think, is the second problem that happens with not moving enough.
I love that analogy. I mean, I love both of the things you say because you give us an idea of what healthy muscle means. Also, because in Mexico, one of the biggest problems is diabetes type 2. So it is a really big problem and we have been approaching it the wrong way. And also what you just said, because it makes all the sense. If you don't move something that was meant to be moved, it's really, I mean, it's terrible and it's logic as well. So yeah. And how do we know, doctor? How do we know if our skeletal muscle, it's healthy, it's enough? What is the percentage? How can I measure it as well? You know, if I'm listening to this, how?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think that it highlights one of our core fundamental challenges. We don't know how much muscle mass would be optimal for someone. Obviously, I would say the more muscle mass that you can have, the better. It's amazing if it's more than 50% your body weight, or at least 50% your body weight. That's a great idea. Great place to start. How we typically measure skeletal muscle mass would be a DEXA or an in-body. And frankly, what I think is important is just that you're doing it. You should measure. You should know what you weigh. You should know a baseline. You could use an in-body or bioimpedance. The other thing is you asked a really smart question, and that question was, how do we know that our muscle is healthy? And that can also be reflective in blood work. We have heard about metabolic syndrome, which is elevated levels of triglyceride, elevated levels of blood pressure, increase in insulin, increase in glucose. All of the things that define metabolic syndrome don't indicate body fat. They indicate muscle health. And that is really, really interesting.
FIT, un sistema enfocado en resultados para gente con muchas ganas, pero poco tiempo. En FIT nos enfocamos en la creación de tus hábitos. Por eso personalizamos tu plan de entrenamiento y el de nutrición también. Nuestra especialidad, planes de entrenamiento de 20 minutos. De manera virtual para que lo hagas desde tu cama, desde tu oficina. Miles de fitters coinciden. Cuando formas parte de esta tribu, te acompañamos de la mano hasta que logres tu objetivo y resolvemos tus dudas. ¿No me crees? Te regalo 7 días de prueba.
That is great because I think a lot of people in my country get those results, but they don't associate it with muscle. So, yeah, let's get into the most exciting part of this and how do we build it? Because one thing I love about your content is how you take something that sounds so complex and unachievable and you turn it into practical actions. And I wanna know, how can we turn off this podcast and start to do something? Exercise and nutrition.
I love it. And let me tell you something else, because this is a Latin America, right? Latin America, there is something very fascinating. The genetic predisposition for diabetes is huge. Also, PCOS, which is polycystic ovarian syndrome, the number one cause of infertility, it seems like, depending on where someone is from, those of Hispanic descent are more, you know, again, it depends on where, but are more susceptible. And I don't know if you've heard that or if you've seen it, but there are real genetic predispositions for the impact of elevated levels of insulin and glucose and insulin resistance and its effect on fertility.
I heard about it, and I know a lot of people that has to struggle with that here in Mexico and Latin America. But I didn't know it had a genetic predisposition.
So yes.
That it's really interesting to know.
Fascinating.
It is.
And why I bring that up is because if We know that individuals or Hispanic individuals have higher risks of cardiovascular disease and diabetes, then skeletal muscle mass becomes more important for you guys. It is critical. It's a non-negotiable. And the amount of people that you can help by listening to this podcast and sharing this podcast is tremendous, because there are lifestyle interventions that can actually change the trajectory of how people age and the health of our loved ones. And this really comes down to two things when it comes to skeletal muscle. Skeletal muscle is easy. The only two things that you have to do are you have to do resistance training and you have to get a nutrition plan in place that supports muscle health. And just from a very simple, practical application standpoint, let's focus on nutrition first, because that's the one thing that everybody does. We all
love
eat.
We all love eat. Love it. So yes, we all eat.
So how are we going to get that right? And the recommendation that I like to give people is 0.7 to 1 gram per pound of target body weight. So if someone is 130 pounds and that's where they want to be, then they could have, you know, between 115 grams of protein to 130 grams of protein. I know it sounds like a lot, but it only sounds like a lot because of how we think about things. And that would be a really effective, easy strategy for people to start with. What are high quality protein sources? So we're going to get, so if you're 130 pounds and you want to stay 130 pounds and you're going to have 130 grams of protein, how are you going to do it? Well, you could have two meals a day, the first and the last meal with 50 grams of protein. And then let's just say your middle meal will have 30 grams of protein. Totally easy. I've just made a meal plan for you.
That is so great. And I know this is a general approach, but really everybody could do this. The thing is, doctor, a lot of people might be thinking, great, I'm covered. I had a 150 gram chicken breast today, because I hear a lot of confusion in that. 150 grams of chicken, it's not 150 grams of protein, guys. It's just like 25 grams of protein, right? So what the doctor is saying is that we need, for example, me, I'm 50 kilos, we weigh ourselves in kilos, that would be like 110 pounds. And yeah, I would need that. But it's not enough, 150 chicken breast. Right. You need more. And then what would look a breakfast like with 40 grams of protein, doctor?
Well, so you and I, for perspective, we are the same size. We are both small humans. And what I do is I make it really easy. I'll have two scoops of protein powder. That's it. And some berries and maybe some sourdough toast. I train in the morning. That's a great place to start. You could have chicken, you could have eggs, you could have a beef patty, you could have salmon, you name it. Whatever high quality protein source that you want to have, you could have yogurt. My assistant is over here. She's having cottage cheese. However you want to do it, it can be done. It's not difficult. You just have to do it. And you really have to prioritize. If people did one thing, if they did one thing after listening to this podcast, and that is increase their dietary protein at their first and their last meal. You know, we'll think about in ounces. Maybe it's 5 ounces. So for every 1 ounce, there is 7 grams of protein. So that would be, you know, 5 times 7. What is that? 35 grams of protein. The one thing that I would have people do is you start your day with protein, because here is something that we didn't talk about, is that when you wake up, and it doesn't have to be right in the morning, could be 10, 11 o'clock, is that your muscle has been in a catabolic state. So you've been fasting, it's been pulling those amino acids. You are primed for nutrients. The muscle is hungry. And so when you hit that protein threshold, that bolus amount, it stimulates muscle.
And it is so important, as you said, what you eat when you wake up, but also, which is not very common, I mean, you said it, but not a lot of people practice it, what is your last meal, no? As well as a meal high in protein. And for the people who it's like getting confused with the ounces and pounds, it's really easy. What the doctor said is 1.5 times your weight, your kilo weight. So if you weigh 50 kilos like me, you'd be eating 75 or 100 grams of protein, more or less. But you know what? It's better that this is just a teeny bit of all the knowledge this woman has. So buy the book, Forever Strong, because in there, you really, I mean, I listened to it in Audible and it's so great because you tell us everything we need to know in just simple practices or actions. So that's the food, that's the nutrition. And what about the exercise? Because a lot of people get struggle with that. I don't have time. I don't know how to start. I get scared at the gym. What do you mean by strength or resistance training?
Yes. Before we talk about that, I want to add one more thing, because in Latin America and in Mexico, there is a cultural high carb kind of tendency. Are you okay with me saying that?
I'm okay with you and I agree.
Okay. So there is a lot of carbs. I mean, it's carbicide over there and it looks amazing. When we're designing our nutrition plan, what I want you to do is you're going to target dietary protein, but your carbohydrates should not be above 40 grams of carbs per meal. So when you guys are thinking about how much rice or how much potato or whatever it is, it should really, and you can go on Fitness Pal or we use Carbon, like Carbon app, pick an app and figure out how many grams of protein or how many grams of carbs is in that meal. Because as you go higher in carbohydrates, friends, you have to listen to this. If you are not training adequately, you will completely distort your metabolism. And you will cause your muscle to look like a marbled steak. So you're going to have 1 gram per pound ideal target body weight, and your carbohydrates are going to be no more than 40 grams of carbs at any given meal.
I love this because it's so easy. And in Mexico, we have a lot of tacos. You probably same tacos. So the thing is, you can have more veggies and more protein, the meat, the chicken, whatever, and less tortillas, guys. And with that, we're going to be okay. And as you said, there's a lot of apps that if you struggle with that, you can know how much are you eating until you get used to it. Like, really, it's not that complicated as it sounds. It really isn't. And you get full, because that's another thing. The protein gets you really, really satisfied and full. You're not hungry. You don't have those spikes that make you feel tired.
Totally. So, and those are all really, really important points. So now you guys know what to do from nutrition. And that's easy. It's simple. If you wanted to really simplify it, you're going to have a 1-to-1 ratio of carbohydrates to protein. So simple. The next
that
thing.
Is, yes. That is so, so simple. Simple.
So
yeah.
Simple. Training. If you do not think you have time for fitness, how in the heck are you going to have time for illness? Because that's what's coming. If you don't do the practical stuff, it is coming for you and there is no way around it. Resistance training is paramount. 2 to 3 days a week of resistance training is where you will start. You must do this. This is a non-negotiable. It is critical, not just for your well-being, but because you love your family and you don't want to be a burden on your family.
That is so important. You said 20 minutes. It's sometimes enough, at least to start. Yeah. 20 minutes of resistance training.
Absolutely. In fact, you guys come to my summit or next time I see you, I will train you for 20 minutes. You'll be done. That's it. It's not about the length of time. It's not, if you have the will, you can get it done. If you have a lot of time, the intensity has to be up and it has to be full body movements. If you have a ton of time and you just like to hang out at the gym, fine. 2-3 days a week. You know, you can't do less than 2 to 3 days a week. That's our bare minimum. And then I want you moving and walking around other places, just get up and walk around and make activity part of your life. You know, are you going to count your reps and sets? Sure. Whatever you want to do. The key is providing enough stimulus to make improvements. And there's a million different ways to do it. If you want to lift heavy, great, lift heavy. If you want to lift lighter, great, lift lighter. As long as you are providing stimulus, to the muscle will adapt. It's just like with anything in life.
Después de mi última certificación con la doctora Stacy Sims, los adaptógenos se han vuelto la base de mi suplementación. Pero no todos los adaptógenos, estas plantas resilientes que nos ayudan a sentirnos mejor, son iguales. Y por eso hoy tenemos como patrocinador del podcast Filosofía a la mejor marca de México, Commons Adaptógenos. ¿Pero por qué son tan buenos y por qué elegí Commons como la marca de adaptógenos que consumo? Primero que nada, porque tiene un doble proceso de extracción, lo que hace que la concentración de los activos sea mayor. Y segundo, porque los ingredientes son orgánicos, tiene certificado de pureza y no tiene pesticidas. Más de 17 productos, pero estos son mis favoritos y los que tomo principalmente para las hormonas y el cerebro. Ashwagandha, melena de león, rodiola y cacao para la energía. Ciencia y botánica, la mezcla perfecta, además de los botecitos más bonitos.
That is gold, doctor. That is gold. If you provide a stimulus, can you hear that, guys? Because sometimes we think we need 2 hours and go to the gym and really lift heavy. And I know a lot of you think I never lift before, so how can I lift heavy now? But if you stimulus for 20 minutes and really work out, you have the benefits of that. And then you're going to fall in love with that, which is the powerful thing with exercise in general. Doctor, you are the right person to answer this because I know you. You're brave and you are the authority. Why are Pilates and yoga a good starting point, as you call them, but not the ideal workout for building muscle?
So I don't know about you guys, but you guys have... Do you guys have American football over there? You have soccer.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. You have.
Yeah, well, we also do have American football, and my husband is super fan. So yeah.
Okay. Amazing. Okay, super fan. And you guys do have elite military operators. You guys have the equivalent of Navy SEALs that we have here. Yeah, I saw it, for sure. Because I was looking.
For sure.
I mean, so let's just say, and you want those people, right, to be strong and powerful. Yeah.
For sure.
Okay. So
we need them.
Do we think that their number one training program is yoga and Pilates?
I would say no.
It is not. And so I bring that up because people will say, well, isn't it just enough? And it's actually amazing. Yoga and Pilates, they are amazing. And I worked on some early studies where that was sufficient to stimulate tissue. But will that be sufficient? And there's various different kinds of Pilates, and there's reformer Pilates, and you know, there's some kind that allows for resistance training, you know, can continue to increase the weight. And also obviously yoga can be very dynamic. I think that these are great starting points, and they're wonderful for flexibility, and they're wonderful for stability and postural aspects and targeting muscle groups. But when it comes to really being able to stimulate muscle in an effective way, I think that we should all begin to put our standards, this is just my opinion, towards resistance training. You want to be as strong as you can, and you do want hypertrophy. You do want to build muscle, because it's not an if, it's a when physical challenges strike. And because of that, one must target body armor. And it's very difficult to build the kind of muscle, the equivalent kind of muscle, with some of these other modalities. Yes, you can build muscle. But again, I think that we have to double down on really training and resistance training.
This is just your opinion. And I say just because you are the expert. So if you want to do something like Pilates and yoga, it's all right. But you have to complement with something else. And because we have a little bit of time, I want to go back to the protein subject. And I want to ask you something that you say constantly. What is high quality protein? Because we think all the protein is the same, and it's not.
No. High quality protein is just based on hard, fast biological numbers. It really is these amino acids, because we frankly just eat for amino acids. We're not actually eating for protein, but we're eating for these individual amino acids that our body cannot make. They're in essence essential amino acids. And what becomes really important is as we age, our efficiency at utilizing these go down. So we all want to live and be strong and look great. Our efficiency at being able to utilize these essential amino acids go down. And high quality protein has the right amount of amino acids that are made for our muscle and our body. And they come from animal-based sources, whereas plant-based proteins have the right protein matrix for plants. And could you get all of your protein from plants? Totally. But if you are someone who wants to eat whole foods, it becomes increasingly more difficult because plants ride along with carbohydrates. And so if you are looking to optimize your body composition, having a lower body fat and a higher healthy skeletal muscle, then prioritizing lean, high quality proteins like egg, lean beef, fish, chicken, turkey, the list goes on, whey protein. I think that this is a very effective strategy. And one more thing on that, it's not just about protein. I know this conversation is really focused on protein because we have to get that piece right. But, you know, back in the day, the old school bodybuilders, it was just all about macros. But macros don't account for the nutrients of concern like B12 and zinc and iron. I mean, the food choices are really imperative.
I love that you say that. I love it because it's the quality, yes, of the protein, of the food as well, the micronutrients. And if I'm a vegan, can I have like a protein powder based? Yeah, would that be?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So so you're saying if you are vegan, could you have a vegan protein powder? Totally.
That would be enough.
Yes, it would be enough protein. But if you are vegan or vegetarian, there's nothing wrong with that. It's all personal choices. People are adults. You guys, everyone can make their own decisions. You could get enough protein if you're vegan or vegetarian, absolutely. But would you be able to get enough B12 and zinc and iron in bioavailable forms? Perhaps not. And this is why food diversity is important, but taking a good supplement could overcome that. If you are vegetarian, it's much easier if you're lacto-ovo-vegetarian, because again, it just comes down to what your values are. Do you care about eating whole foods, or are you okay with eating processed foods? Do you make choices based on, religious or ethical reasons? Then, you know, you can absolutely do that, but we do just want to make sure that we're balancing our nutrition out with that.
I love it. We almost finished, but we cannot go from this episode without asking you this controversial question, which is, what would you say to people that says or think eating too much protein can be harmful for your kidneys or your health in general? Because that's something that people still say, even professionals in health.
I say good. Then there's more protein for the rest of us.
I love it. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, if you are that misinformed, I'm sorry, and good for you, and there'll be more protein for the rest of us. But that is so old school, right? There's been multiple meta-analyses that protein does not have a negative impact on healthy kidneys. In fact, it can improve function, improve glomerular filtration rate. So it is positive versus negative. People will say protein is bad for bone. Protein is made, bone is made from protein. It's hype. It's not real.
Love it. I love it. So yeah, if you that misinformed, well, you're going to get here at some point.
Right.
But Dr. Tumor, because English is not obviously my first language, I get really confused.
You're doing great.
Thank you, girl. I get really confused, and I know a lot of coaches and trainers that get confused as well with the strength and resistance training. Is that the same? Is there a difference?
I mean, I think it's just semantics, you know. From my perspective, resistance training can encompass all of it. Typically, people, when they talk about strength, they talk about a lower rep range and heavier weights. But I think it's more semantics than anything else. But I do think it's a great question.
I wanted to do this interview because I love everything you said, but also because of personal curiosity. I am 43 years old, as I said, and I've been strength training for the last 20 years. I eat enough protein and I think I do everything. I sleep. And since I turned 40, building muscle has become really difficult. Mm. And I don't want to think it's impossible because I know there's a way. What more can I do? What more can we do? Because my audience is more or less like me.
Yeah. Well, number one, I loved that you came to the Eudaimonia talk and that you came to come train with me. So you're definitely doing the right stuff. The other thing that I would say is you have to make sure that you are continuously providing stimulus necessary. And then also getting with a good doctor to look at your blood work and look at your hormone status can be very important. That is, again, I actually am still a practicing physician and we have a full clinic, and just finding someone that is skilled with body composition is really important.
I love it. I want to go there right now. So, but that's another subject.
No, it's all okay. Remote, by the way. You are welcome. We have a lot of, so we're talking about Coral. Coral's been a patient for a long time. So we do have a lot of Latin American patients.
I love it. That's great to know, because I know a lot of people is going to be thinking, all right, yeah, but where can I find a person like her that knows and can talk to me like she does? So I just love this. This is the best information ever.
We do blood work. We do nutrition. But again, just because you've hit 40, building muscle can be harder, but there's just a little finesse that is required.
I love it because it's so helpful. You read about it, but sometimes you don't know how to do it. And well, in this podcast, we have like the last question always, which is the unpopular opinion. Actually, we call it brave opinion. It's not unpopular, just brave. Something that you think everybody should know. And probably a lot of people won't agree with it, but you want people to know it.
Yeah, ready?
Yes.
Red meat does not cause cancer. Whole red meat, whole unprocessed red meat does not cause cancer.
I love it. I knew you were going to give us a big and powerful one. I love it. Thank you, doctor. Really, thank you for your time. I mean, I already said it, but I'm a huge fan. And a lot of people, it's a huge fan of you because we've been talking about you here on, and everybody deserves to know your message. So thank you very much again. And I want to go to your clinic now.
It's remote. You can do it. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your interest and support. And I'm so glad that Forever Strong is now available in Spanish and for Latin America. So it's, you know, I am only one person, and the information and the way in which we can shift the paradigm can change lives. And I think ultimately that's what we're all looking to do. That's why you have this podcast, is because how do we improve the lives of other people, and how do we be able to be of service? And I think that this is one of the ways. So thank
you. This definitely is. Where else can we find you in social media, for example?
Yes. Instagram. I'm at Dr. Gabrielle Lyon. I have a great podcast, which I think, by the way, Laura, we should definitely make sure we have that translated to Spanish, because there's AI that does that. We have our clinic. They can find all this information on our website, drgabriellelyon.com. We have free newsletters and free information. Everything.
I love your newsletter. So we're going to get all the links. So if you're listening to this, don't worry. We're going to put them here. And yeah, please read or listen to that book because it's great. Thank you very much. And well, see you in your clinic. Bye.
Bye.
Si te gustó y te sirvió este episodio, recuerda darle suscribir y compartirlo con todas aquellas personas que puedas. Es la única manera que tenemos para poder seguir haciendo contenido gratuito que sea de valor. Y recuerda, este podcast es únicamente con fines informativos. Las opiniones expresadas aquí no sustituyen el consejo médico. Siempre consulta con un profesional de la salud calificado y de acuerdo a tus necesidades antes de tomar cualquier decisión relacionada con tu bienestar.
Si la información que escuchaste te pareció útil y quieres que siga estudiando y resumiéndote cosas para que puedas tener más autoconocimiento, no olvides suscribirte, darme like y seguirme en la plataforma que estés escuchando esto.